that has big time camp. What the movie will be the ultimate champ. You might be finger crazy, my finger diseased, but do you watch another chance to find the best of this?
We rate each movie in 5 categories, none of which are objective quality.
It's Stan, Gene, Jack and Nick who watch it till it's finished, because the love for this movie can be diminished. And make the film's plot has no rhyme or reason, but that's a part of charm.
Colin Brad is off the season.
It's low budget film that is most true. They find a flick that monster boogaloo.
Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
Yacht-Mala, Yacht-Mala. Welcome back, my friends, to another episode of the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. This is season 9. Show me yours if you show me yours. I don't know what the hell it's called anymore. It hardly even matters. I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu. Totally happy to be with you today to talk some crazy movies. And I'm joined by my good friend. I got James Cotta.
I'm thrilled to be here. I'm incredibly strange and mixed up. But I am still living.
Oh, all right. Well, there you go. And now we have a creature, Jack Hall.
Sup.
And a zombie. It's Nick Boxer.
Greetings and salutations. I like how you let Jack go second, yet he still seems surprised. He complained last time about going first. He was not ready. Second, still unprepared.
I
know what I am surprised about now that I say it out loud. Holy fuck.
Okay. Well, whether he's prepared or not, the freight train keeps a rolling, and we are going to talk the incredibly strange creatures who stopped living and became mixed up zombies by Ray Dennis Steckler. And yeah, incredibly strange, just completely, you know, we could just stop right there and move on. But I know that we got to get Nick to essentially explain the plot of this movie to us.
Well, please. It's all in the title, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Sure it is.
Yeah.
It's a very descriptive title. It's basically a slug line and a title at the same time.
Wow. I was not prepared for this film. I really wasn't. But here's what happens. Jerry, our teen, let's call him, with a receding hairline, takes his best girl to the carnival. Now, while at this carnival, he runs astray of a gypsy woman. Never a good idea. And falls in love with a stripper. Now, the stripper puts a curse on him because, I don't know, that he said some mildly not nice things about gypsies. I didn't really care about that part or even really understand it. But he is then hypnotized into running around as a zombie and killing people without his knowledge. The girlfriend just sort of goes away for a while. It's never really explained. And at the end, we find out the gypsy's keeping a series of zombies in the basement, which are instantly released, and Jerry ends up trying to kill himself in the ocean. Luckily, the cops are there to do it for him. Did I mention this is a musical? And I use musical in the loosest freaking sense of the word, because those musical numbers, and there are several, and those dancing numbers, and there are several, are absolutely terrible. The musical numbers are all standards. I found out after watching this movie. Did not recognize a one until I actually typed in the names of the songs into YouTube and found out, yes, I knew all the songs, but they were so bad they were unrecognizable from what is in this film.
Well, I mean, they're all filmed in one day, so what do you expect?
Yeah, no, but Choo 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 Boogie should be recognizable. I know that song. I like that song. Did not recognize it until I actually typed out the words Choo 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 Boogie. My God, the musical numbers are special in this.
Well, and I guess besides special, and like you say, they're plentiful, but ultimately more to the fact that like they're nonsensical and completely unnecessary to the rest of the story, unless you consider the musical part to be the story, in which case only about half of them make no sense.
It's the first ever musical horror, and that's a fact.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I was just slightly confused because the musical numbers seem to be slotted in at random.
Yeah, I can't figure out why they happen at most of the times they happen. Like, especially near the end where there's a dance number and then nothing between it and then just a second dance number. Like, we're just like, I had written down another dance number and then the next note is another. I do love it. They're wacky. Happen. Yeah. I do have a question about the dance numbers.
Oh yeah.
Okay, so the idea is they're a carnival, like an old style, like Coney Island type. Like it doesn't look like a traveling carnival. It looks like an amusement park that like is one spot.
Yeah.
And they pay their quarter or whatever to go into this dance tent to watch the dance number. And then the number that actually happens is like 9 or 10 people in like a big showpiece number and an audience of 6. Now I know sometimes we get bogged down in details, but what's the financial model?
More people on stage than in an audience.
Exactly.
Well, it's part of the carnival. I mean, it doesn't have to make money individually. It makes money as a part of the carnival, the overall money coming in.
And like it totally does not feel like part of the carnival. It feels completely somewhere else because A, it's such a higher budget production than the actual rest of the carnival.
Well, this is Ray Dennis Sekler's highest budgeted movie ever made at $38,000.
That is awesome.
The sequel that he made in 2008, shortly before his death, $3,800. Oh. So one tenth. This was in 25 years earlier, in 1964.
See, you guys spent a lot more time thinking about that than I did. I could only think, like, is this guy related to Nicolas Cage? Because he looks exactly like Nicolas Cage, only slightly older / younger. I don't know how that works. But well, I spent a significant amount of time.
Try to figure out what age Nicolas Cage is at any point. And you're like, I mean, look at any photo of Nicolas Cage from any movie he's been in and then try to figure out, like, if you tried to put them in age order, you would never accomplish it.
Again, this is filmed in 1964. So Dennis Stickler at the time, 26 years old.
and he may actually be Nicolas Cage. Like, there is that possibility that he just. I do like kind of the booty shaking weird carnival show that takes up about half this movie, though. That's like, I do like that. That's like a sizable amount of the film without actually, you know, impacting the story in any way.
Finished talking about the dancing yet? Do you know, because they filmed this in one day and didn't really have rehearsals, that Ray Dennis Stekler thought he could distract the audience by making the dancers chew gum? From this, distract them from the fact that the dancing wasn't so good. It's true. So they're all chewing gum if you watch it. Oh. So another thing is you'll notice one of the actual dancers is actually the lead actress who plays the role of Angie, because the girl that was supposed to be the lead actress right before her film said, "Oh, I got to go meet my boyfriend." So Ray Desteklu just got mad, pointed to somebody on the stage, said, "You're now the lead." That's awesome. How she got the part.
Awesome.
I did find that slightly confusing, actually.
Yeah. Oh, I got confused the opposite direction because I was trying to figure out like which of these brunettes was which because I couldn't keep track of them anymore. Oh, that they the same person really actually explains a whole lot to me. That they're not the same character but the same actress actually explains a ton for me because I was like trying to keep track of. I'm like, why did they cast all these brunettes that look almost exactly the same?
Oh no, she was the one blonde. She was the blonde, the one whose mother was a makeup artist, Ray Desteklu's girlfriend. That's the one I'm talking about.
But I'm still not helped.
No, I'm still not helped either.
All right. Back to square two.
There is no square one for this movie.
There was one musical song that I thought the person sang very well and was a good song. There's one where she's off by herself on the side of the stage or whatever it looked like. And she kind of sings it. I'm like, it was a nice performance. I'll give them that one. Well, all things considered.
Yeah. I mean, it's the thing about this movie is that, I mean, it almost feels like he lost interest at some point in making it because there's no good way to
he's like, trying to raise money. He's acting, he's writing, yeah, he's directing, he's producing. You know, he's being told that he's going to be sued for $5 million from Columbia Pictures because the title originally had "or" in between. So they thought it was sounded too much like Dr. Strangelove or how I, So, awesome. Yeah, I know. This trivia on this movie is incredible. Like, far better. James Woods, one of the extras.
No way.
Yeah.
Well, how about that?
Yeah.
I somehow thought there would be more trivia about the hair. Everybody in this movie except our lead has great hair. I mean, we have Jerry's best friend who I can't spot a reason he's in this film. That pompadour is great.
Well, in 1964, the pompadour, you know, and I'd like to say about that character, to cast this guy that we don't know why he's in the film, to give him so many speaking roles when he has an accent that makes sure you don't understand a damn thing he says.
Oh my God, I could. When they go into the fortune teller and she says, "Do you want your fortune told?" And he says, "What do you think we came here for? For to eat?" Like, what on earth? Like, what accent is this? Like, is it a real accent that I can't discern? Is he trying to do something else?
I was like, is he German? Is he Scottish? Is he Australian? I don't know.
And you can't tell from his real name either, Atlas King. I mean,
like, possibly
real with quotation marks around it.
Yeah, exactly.
Possibly Greek. Like, I don't know. Eat? He's closer to the Count from Sesame Street is the closest accent I could match him to.
You have to wonder because every scene he's in, the boyfriend, I believe, of the mother who Jerry's dating the girl, the father is there as well, yet he just stands there for the entire movie.
I thought that the boyfriend was her brother. Like that guy was her, but the guy who was like working on the car and stuff like that. Yeah. I thought he was her brother.
He's just inserted in random scenes, but he doesn't have a speaking role. I don't think he talks.
He does speak. He because he does say something like, "Are you gonna get a job?" And Ray Dennis Steckler's Jerry character who doesn't work, which is why the mother doesn't like him. And he thinks that's completely unreasonable.
Basically,
you know, blows that off, the idea of getting a job.
The world's my college.
That's right. That was the line.
The world's my college. I love when they get together to go to the amusement park. It's the two guys. And yeah, like at first I was like, was one of them her brother or something? Cause like, he seems to be hanging around her house a lot. and then they start holding hands. I'm like, I mean, for the kind of movies we watch, that still doesn't tell me anything. but I was like, this is like third wheel of the movie. Like it's like this is your date night.
Third wheel of the movie.
Well, Cash, you know, I mean, Jerry, Terry, played by Cash Flag. I just can't stop saying that name. But like, you know, Jerry went out of his way to prove how hip and cool that he was, because, you know, he shows up to pick her up and like gets out of the car and sits on the roof of the car because that's cool. And then, of course, got to bring his buddy out on a date with his best girl because, sure, you know, and it's so I guess it's so that when he falls in love and wants to stick around and watch the girls, that he knows that he's got his good buddy who is going to take his girlfriend home.
Because that is the key here, is that Jerry becomes one of the, or maybe the only, mixed up zombie living teenage person, psychopath, dummy character.
Yeah, they don't.
He gets acid. Somebody else gets acid thrown in their face. I you know, but I think, is he the only one who becomes, besides the one that already is, the one who's really, really ugly at the beginning?
Is he a zombie? I don't think he's a zombie, but that doesn't matter. Nope. But the point.
I don't think any of them are actually zombies.
No, no. But yeah, Jerry is the only one, like, we do not establish, or they do not establish whatsoever, that any of these other zombies actually killed anybody. It's just Jerry who winds up killing anybody at all. And, you know, so it's, and then, but then magically you find a whole bunch of the zombies at the end that you know, all burned with acid. And it's just like, so, okay. I mean, who am I to question Ray Dennis?
Hey, I'm still trying to figure out how they escaped.
Well,
because they just sort of opened the door for them and they all pile out of the basement.
Well, because the cops showed up, there was a shootout.
The cops did really? Not show How up did before the zombies. Completely? The zombies were out before the cops ever thought of coming to the carnival.
Oh, well, my God, we're actually having this conversation. We're trying to figure out what happened and the plot points of freaking this film.
Yeah, well, it's true. The plot, and see, the plot's a real stretch to suggest, because there is no... I mean, there is a plot. It's very loose, you know.
I think it would be more understandable without the musical numbers.
Well, sure.
The movie would come in under 2 hours.
The movie, it's only 80 minutes to begin with, but I think,
you're down to about 25 minutes without the musical numbers.
Okay.
It's only 82 minutes, I think.
Okay.
But in fairness, like, there's a spot where it goes from close up to close up to close up that I felt was about an hour and a half itself. It's just like tight close up to tight close up in a non-dramatic scene.
And I mean, and make no doubt, you know, I totally get where Nick is going with this, because watching this movie does feel like you are watching something weird for about 2 to 3 hours.
go ahead, Nick.
I did enjoy, and this is the thing enjoyed most, is the random carnival backgrounds.
Yes.
You know, I enjoyed seeing the papier-mâché masks and, you know, the props. The props were wonderful in the background. And better actors than some of the actual people.
Well, here's a quick survey then. This is like the fourth or fifth movie we've done that happens at an amusement park.
That all?
Like about 5% of the movies we've done are at amusement parks for some reason. So we got Santa and the Ice Cream Bunny. We got New Kids. We got Dracula Frankenstein. I don't know if we've got more. Which amusement park would you actually want to go to?
I'd say this one, actually.
Yeah. This one, Dancing Girls, yeah.
Dancing Girls, it seemed like it was still possible to see stuff. Frankenstein, it did seem like that carnival was closing down. This one.
Come on, they got a tour of where all the people got murdered.
Yeah. But that was more of a roadside attraction.
Oh, hey.
Than a carnival.
In that part of the world, that's a major attraction.
and maintained by people with no training. So that's good too. I Ice Cream Bunny, the Santa Land.
Well, of course, yeah. For you, because you're hoping to run into the girl you have a crush on.
That's Thumbelina, yeah.
Yeah.
any chance of meeting Thumbelina, who would now be in her mid-70s.
Close enough.
All right. Other than the 10 minutes at the end where he frolics in the surf trying to kill himself, and the cops try to stop him by shooting him. Dare try to kill yourself. Bang.
He's ugly and acid scarred. So of course they have to try to kill him.
Did anyone ever figure out how the cops figured out he was the one killing?
My assumption is that they figured, oh my god, he's acid scarred and ugly. It's got to be him. That's just the way these things work.
So, like the 8 acid-scarred zombies that killed before him,
they just figured
were innocent?
No, they were all acid-scarred and ugly, therefore worth shooting.
Fair enough, yeah.
It's like the Frankenstein's monster rule. Oh my god, he's ugly and creepy-looking. We better kill him.
I did like the one cop that actually let his partner get eaten by a zombie and ran back like 4 steps to shoot him. He's got my partner. Well, I better back up and shoot him.
Oh, so much detail to delve into with this film.
Much more than I had any clue on. Let's get to scoring.
I think we're good. All right. In our search for the ultimate B-movie, we rate every film in 5 categories, none of which are objective quality. The first category we call schlock appeal, and we start with Stan.
Well, if this were rated by objective quality, then I would suggest a minus double digits would probably be in the offing. But thankfully, like you say, it is not. It's not a well put together movie at all. It's not a good movie. It's often boring, but at the same time, it's just so well incredibly mixed up that I can't help but feel like it has a certain level of schlockiness to it. So I'm going to give it a 7.
You know what? It probably deserves a 7, but I'm going to up that one to an 8. Just for that wonderfully animated title card of the zombie that slowly evolves as we clue in on the eye. I was very excited watching that, thinking, you know, we'd actually have like a decent zombie in this. There isn't one, but
nope.
I was drawn in by the animated card. So,
and it was all downhill from there.
Yep. Sort of the James Bond of zombie films.
Where did that end up, Nick?
8.
8, all right. It started with it probably deserves a 7, and then it just kind of... didn't know if it actually got a 7 by the end of it. All right. Jack.
I wish I could actually score this higher, because it's so schlocky. It really is. But the problem is, and I think this is a movie, one of those movies that is hurt by the setting. If you watch this with a group of people, because the first 40 minutes, like nothing happens and it's so damn boring, that by the time it starts to hit the real boogaloo elements, I was already bored and out of it. It's tough to draw you back into the level you wish. So if you are watching with people where you can make fun of those first 40 minutes and all the dancing scenes and singing scenes and all that stuff, instead of just becoming eventually bored by them, I think I would have gotten a lot more, because then it would have been just make fun. Now the boogaloo starts. Now we're really making fun. But as it was like, oh, man, I was bored. And so, yeah, by the time that stuff got around to it, I wasn't as into the film as I would have liked. So I can only give it a 6.
All right. Well, I will. I think the title carries a lot of the points for this movie. Mm-hmm. This is one of the longest titles I've ever seen on a film. It's the second longest.
It's the second longest there is. Yeah. There's a Roger Corman film. I can't remember which one it is, but it's even longer.
It's called The Saga of the Viking Women and Their Voyage to the Waters of the Great Sea Serpent.
There you go.
Which I would really like to see now.
Yeah. How much magic's in that one? Can we put that in?
Grammatically, it's more correct than this film's title.
Seven is where I'm going to end up on this. More heart than budget. What was the budget there, Jack?
$38,000.
I mean, $38,000. The fact that well, I don't see. I guess that's the weirdest thing, right? Is that I don't. I mean, in 1964, $38,000 actually seems like a fair bit to me, given that they really didn't do very much with that. Other than have a day of dancing and singing and a loose attempt at an actual story that went on. So it's very hard to say that. But the fact that Ray Dennis Deckler was in it and that he tried to do all of this stuff and that he needed people to help him out and stuff like that, you know, I'm going to give it a 7 just for his, you know, stick-to-itiveness.
my buddy Jerry, that man is all heart and no budget. I'm only gonna give it a 6 though, because nobody else gave a damn.
Look, this guy he's scraping money, he's using the family cars as the vehicle in the film, he's broke as hell, trying his best to get it out there. After this film is released, he would go to the theaters where it was playing after he bought back the distribution. And he'd go to the theaters where it's playing and give masks to the employees at the theaters. And when his character becomes a zombie, he put on one of those masks and have everybody run out, including himself, to try and give people a scare. He did that for 5 years.
Oh, man. Oh, my God.
Yeah, for 5 years. Because he would take this thing out and you know, after everybody had seen it, nobody was coming. He just changed the name to Diabolical Dr. Voodoo and The Teenage Psycho Meets Bloody Mary, and just kept on showing it and showing it, trying to get his money back. Like, there was so much heart here with no skill or thought whatsoever. 9.
I am changing my score to a 9 after hearing that. Plus, I want somebody to invent a time machine so that I can go back to a theater and be there with them when that happens.
What a different time of the way the movies were promoted, where because there was no secondary market. There's no VHS. There's a movie like this isn't going to end up on TV. So if you don't see it in the theater, there's literally no other way to see it.
For many years, the only mention of this film, because so few people have seen it, was in the Famous Monsters magazine. So until it came available in the 80s on VHS, people actually thought it was a hoax. Because the name was so long and strange, people thought it was a hoax and that this film didn't actually exist.
That it was just some kind of in-joke with fandom, basically.
Yeah.
Wow. Let's make that a 9 for me, too. That I was going to go 8, but wow.
Yeah,
that's incredible. That's amazing. What the fuck moments? lots of fucking luck.
Yeah, I know. Well, pulling them out absolutely is like, because and I know we talk about these moments a lot. Like, this has there's no cohesion to the movie. So by suddenly something coming up and being like, what the fuck is going on there? That's actually not a surprise. It's just an every, you know, minute occurrence for this movie. You know, because it's easy to say, oh, the big musical number with 6 people, what the fuck? But yeah, what the fuck, right? You know, I mean, when you look at it, like, there is some really crazy moments. Like, there's the awesome scene with whatever the gypsy woman's name is and the crystal ball, when it's just like, no, man, tell us our fortune with the crystal ball, you know? Like, but, I mean, there's nothing that seems really too crazy to me, other than it being entirely all what the fuck. So I'm just going to give it a 5.
That's probably fair. I'll give it a 6, though. The standout what the fuck was obviously the zombie escape. Because other than the first scene, I did not know there were other zombies until the final scene of this movie. And then they just keep pouring out of the basement.
They're probably, I'm surprised you could find that many people.
Checked in on them, maybe given them a musical number.
Oh, that would be great. This movie is a 10 on everything if it gives the zombies a musical number.
Like a Thriller type
number at the end.
That would be spectacular. It's tough because it could be actually crazier, like in some ways, in the fact that most of the narrative, it's all incompetence, like it's all like poor filmmaking choices as far as, you know, as what's carrying the WTFs. But the big one for me is you have the stripper, right? And she's out there and she's stripping, she's taking off her clothes, and you cut to the audience and it's like 5 people. And the front row is a woman in her about 50 years old sitting there bored as hell looking at it. I'm like, why is she there? What made her? Why is she staying? What is her? Like, she's so out of place
It was a burlesque show. They had a bunch of different types of acts. Uh-huh. Just the stripper was one of them.
Uh-huh.
She was waiting for the awesome comedian to come back.
Oh, man, that comedian. Oh, those jokes.
God, yeah. And some people were dressed up really nice, too.
Yeah. And there was also the carnival barker who had the line, 20 beautiful women and 10 beautiful costumes. So
that's a great line.
Yeah. I'm going to go with an 8.
All right. I think just the sheer volume of musical numbers is the biggest what the fuck, because it's a good third of the film's running time are these numbers that have essentially no connection to the rest of the plot. They like the dancing girl at the beginning, I thought she was supposed to be a main character. I thought the two stories would intersect, and they don't. They just kind of wander around each other. It's like two short films that got cut back together.
Well, one is Incredibly Strange, and the other is...
it's so mixed up, yeah. The dancing girl's fear of cats, that is also never revisited. It's a huge plot point in the first 5 minutes and then never mentioned again. And I think my biggest what the fuck is the gypsy woman fortune teller. She has a big mole on her face that looks kind of like a churro has been glued to her, like a Cheeto is stuck there rather than a I guess every gypsy woman has to have a giant mole. That's how you know. I'm gonna go with a 7 on this. It does lose some points, for being just bad choices as opposed to weird results. But it's a good mix of both. Memorable moments, Stan.
Well, now see, this is, of course, I brought this movie, and this is a movie that I saw a long time ago when I was watching the list of the 50 worst movies of all time. And now,
which
one
ranked
of the,
this number one?
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Is it really? Is it really the number one?
It was ranked number one on that list.
Yeah. That list, wow. Incredible.
Now, the name by itself gets points. It's like, there's no, I mean, you may not remember the order, you may not remember all of the words, but you certainly remember, a fair chunk of it. You'll give that a moment. But, you know, that Dracula versus Frankenstein or whatever the hell it's called, you mentioned that earlier, and it has a carnival. And so the problem is there was like 3 or 4 movies that had carnivals in that list. All of them get mixed up, and I couldn't tell you which one had which carnival and all that stuff. I'm not 100% sure that I could tell you tomorrow which one had which carnival. So even the musical numbers, I actually forgot a lot. But the second that I put the movie on, I was like, oh, yeah, Cash Flag. And then I saw him, and I was just like, yeah, totally remember that guy who does not look like he belongs at all. You will forget a lot, which is probably a good thing. But the name by itself, that will stick. And the sheer, I'll say, enjoyment with air quotes of watching it. yes, that's so it's a six.
I love that Stan's, if he was selling this film, that his tagline would be, "You will pray for amnesia."
Stan, I see where you're heading with that, with the name being memorable. And I will remember the name. I don't think I'll associate it with the film.
I think I was hard pressed by the time we actually recorded this episode to do that.
The name is great. The box art, the poster is spectacular.
Absolutely gorgeous. Yep.
Nothing associates that with what I saw at all. I guarantee you a year from now, I'll be sorting through some sort of DVD bin, and I pray I remember this film so I don't buy it.
and yes, in 2020, Nick will be sorting through a DVD bin. Actually, with nobody else.
I'd expect him to be sorting through a VHS bin. So.
That's not a mistake, folks.
I will probably spend another hour thinking about this film just because I am still unsure of the gypsies' plan to create these zombies. Why? The whys and hows are a little cloudy in my mind. So I'll give it a two.
Gypsy was a criminal mastermind.
It's basically like a Dashiell Hammett novel. It's like it's Sherlock Holmes has to unpack this thread.
Oh man! So I'm sorry. Are you done? Are you done, Nick?
Yeah, I'm done.
Okay, so the title definitely is memorable. It was voted funniest title of all time in a poll the Cisco Roger Ebert had. And so it definitely is. For me, there's one thing that, and it also could have come up in the More Heart Than Budget, and that is the scene at the end when he's a zombie and he jumps on those rocks. You got water waves crashing against this rocks that are wet and slippery as hell. He's trying not to fall off. That's Ray Dennis Seckler, a.k.a. Cash Flag, a.k.a. Jerry. And he literally could have slipped and hit his head and died. And I actually thought, at any point in time that he's doing it, he's just out there going for it. There's no, that's not a stunt man or whatever. And I'm like, I totally remember that. Like it's burned into my head. I thought that was a good shot. And I thought that, like the bravery of doing that to complete his movie. So that's a memorable moment for me. It's the only one. Four.
Dude's balls out. Like, there's no question that, this guy is absolutely nuts for trying to make this movie.
I'll also have that challenge of if there were a whole bunch of if this was on Tubi in three different titles, I would end up watching the first 5 minutes three times then. because it would pull me in, and then I would be watching this movie about the dancing girl who's afraid of cats, and I'm like, whoa, this is really starting to come together.
Don't you hate those movies that you don't recognize for until you put in your time, until you put in that 15-20 minutes?
And it's like, hey, this seems, oh shit.
And then I also it's it is I would put it as the second best adaptation of Manchurian Candidate. The guy who's hypnotized and then he doesn't know it, and then he gets his trigger thing and tries to kill someone.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So good for that. I'm also going 4 out of 10 though. Crazy concept, Stan.
Oh, God.
I challenge you to come up with the concept and then tell us how crazy.
it's true. Well, I mean, one of the real elements of figuring out a crazy concept is the idea of pitching it to a studio. And here's the thing. I don't think there's any way that Ray Dennis Deckler could pitch this to anybody, because I don't know that it actually has a cohesive concept.
Yes, he did. Like I say, they had a distributor at one point. He was unhappy with them, but he had one.
Yeah. I guess what you could do is you could say the first monster musical. I mean, if you go with that as a concept, and being that this was the first, that is crazy. I think that's acceptable. The fact that there is no real good concept and the storyline just adds to it. And the fact that he's balls out nutty to try to make this movie. Like, it's, if you're going to hang your hat on a movie and be like, well, I've got to make the best damn movie. Like, this is what he came up with. That's crazy. So I am going to give this movie a 9.
I believe there is a plan. I believe there was a concept. I do not know what that concept or plan was, but I believe it existed, and I believe it was crazy. 8.
I think you guys both said everything I should have said, but I'm only going to give it a 7. But both of what everything you guys said, dead on. Except for the part where there was a plan.
Maybe he believed in God, so there was a plan.
I'm on a mission.
I mean, he must have filmed those musical numbers thinking, you know, this is going to, like, work.
Again, who goes in and says, let's film 4 musical numbers, no rehearsal, one day, and go, that's going to work.
It's gonna be about a third of the screen time, and I'm using no one who's a professional dancer.
Well, that's I didn't say it was a good plan.
It's a plan.
Yes, and
I agree. It's a plan.
It is a plan. Yes.
Yeah, I can't come up with the pitch for this movie other than the title itself being the thing you would pitch. What's it about? Well, it's about these incredibly strange creatures who stopped living and came mixed up zombies. 7 out of 10 is what I'm giving it as well. All right, that brings us to the end of voting. And every season we have 6 secret modifiers. This movie does get one of those modifiers. It gets a +1 for being the first movie we've seen by this director. Most of the other films made by Ray were 70s adult films that played in Times Square. I wonder if he did the same thing and just hung out in Times Square, like running into the theater halfway through.
I honestly think I think a movie on this guy's life would be fascinating. Preferably not a documentary. I'm talking a biopic, though a documentary could be good too.
It could interspersed with musical numbers.
Yeah. One More Time, I think, is the name of the movie. That's like he didn't call it a sequel. He called it an extension of this film. If you want to join the 3,500 brave souls who've watched it, it is on YouTube.
What's it called again?
I think it's called One More Time, if I remember correctly. Now I'm, yeah.
All right. I'm sure I forgot what we called our fans again.
Boogaloo lunatics, they would have to be, but here's the thing: I'm actually surprised that he didn't double down and try to go longer with the name.
Mm. Yeah, if that was the one thing you could sell,
yeah,
because it Because on a marquee, it just forces every other title off the off of the marquee. All right. Gives us a final total of a pretty respectable 68 out of 100, which on the Octagon, which is our ongoing record, it is dead even with Santa's Sleigh right behind Malibu Express and Space Mutiny.
All right.
Which is the weirdest list of films now that, like, when I say those, like, three or four of those out loud, it's interesting. Although, crowd it's in.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, definitely, I would not want to watch this one again, unlike some of those other ones.
And it definitely is One More Time is the name of the sequel. So if you don't want to watch this again, don't watch that. I'm not touching it. Like, I'll be honest with you. I'm good.
But this I'll be honest. Like, this did score better than I expected. But it fits so many of the criteria that we're looking for. When you talk about, like, there's no question, it is not the best, most Boogaloo B movie ever. But it's fucked up. There is no doubt about that.
It was just too boring. And like I say, though, I think this is one of the best party movies that we've seen.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think if we were all together as a group, no question, this would be great fun to watch.
And one you could kind of wander in and out of, because there's so little narrative that you can, you know, you could you'll wander off and be doing something else during the kind of chit chatty, and then come back and watch another musical number.
Didn't you get messed up before watching? It didn't seem to have affected your
yeah. I didn't know whether that would help or hinder my ability to follow the plot threads during the second half as it all came together. it honestly did make the frolicking in the ocean thing feel about 2 hours. It's still kind of a surprising 5 minutes of real screen time.
It really is long.
Seems long for what's essentially, like, you know, in a Universal Monsters movie would be about 30 seconds. They've almost caught up. Bang, bang. Oh, and roll end credits.
All right. Well, let's.
Have you actually inserted this into the Octagon yet, or you just scored it? Correct. I'm just wondering if the title fit into the.
I was already trying to figure out how it fits into the Octagon. Without messing up the entire grid system. Yeah. may have to come up with an acronym of some.
All
sort.
Right. It's the gift that keeps giving.
Yeah. I think a lot of times people just call it The Incredibly Strange and then ...
Yeah.
So I think just go with that.
Sounds great.
Now there's a movie I'd watch.
Mixed Up Zombies also. A movie
and he might have made that as one of his porns. Who knows?
and I'm sure you will watch it at some point.
Sure enough.
Okay, speaking of Incredibly Strange and all that stuff, we have more movies to get to, and our next movie that we are going to get to is Among the Shadows, and this was brought to us by James and his incredible love of Lindsay Lohan, so I know that the excitement is strong with him.
About time we got some Lohan in here. Like one of her eight films needed to make it onto the show one way or the other.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, they could all get on at some point. But
I'm already seeking a way to get Herbie fully loaded on. So it'll end up in one season eventually.
I love it.
All right. Well, let's do some business. So tell the folks where to find us.
All right. We are on Instagram at Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. And for everything else, visit our podcast sponsors, WeTalkPodcasts.com. That is the site that hosts The Octagon, our ongoing list of every film we've talked about. And you can search that. You can also sort the list by the most what the fuck movie, the most... The most schlock movie, whatever your zone is, whatever the thing you like is. And then, of course, the final total. And We Talk Podcasts also has a Facebook and a Twitter.
And the completely rebuilt We Talk Podcast, I noticed.
Beautiful, beautiful site. And also, please subscribe on any podcast app you like. And we are, our episodes go up on YouTube as well.
Yay, us. We're awesome.
Yeah, we're everywhere.
Yeah. Good work. Good work, all. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, I mean, see, we do good work. We just watch things that aren't good work. But okay. So,
what the schlock appeal score on our show is.
Ooh. I guess it depends on the show. But
it does, yeah.
Yeah. But season 9 continues with Among the Shadows. This is If You Show Me Yours. And I can't believe that we're getting close to the end of the season. Just a few more movies left to go. It seems crazy, but...
We won't get to them if you don't shut up.
Okay, fair enough. All right. Jeez, you guys and your stuff and your words. Okay. But for Nick and for Jack and for Jim, I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu, and thanks for listening to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
Look, then run for your life. Incredible is the word for the world's first monster musical. See in magnificent Eastman color the daring, dancing, enticing, and horrifying, the incredibly strange creatures who stopped living and became mixed-up zombies. From the innocence of music and laughter comes the twilight of terror. Along the midway, scantily clad dancers luring the young lovers into the sideshows. See the dancing girls of the carnival murdered by the incredible night creatures of the midway.
I will know that something evil lies ahead for me.
An unspeakable pit of dismal subhuman monsters who drool and gibber, moaning for the thrill of revenge. Incredible are the songs, the gaiety, the zombie stomp of those who will stop living. And then the mix-up, trickery, and the device to ruin. See the hunchback of the midway fight a duel of death with the mixed-up zombies, turning men into monsters, twisted, tormented human vultures, yearning to kill, incredible creatures clutching at the thin thread with their miserable eyes. Human vultures, only the weird zombies remain.
Obey.
Who is the woman branded in birth wearing the ward of horror?
Do as Madame Estrella said.
The world's first monster musical. The incredibly strange creatures who stopped living and became mixed-up zombies.